Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to another episode of Endurance Chat. I am Floodman11, and with me today is Chrishwasher97. How are you doing today, Chris?
I mean, it's Nürburgring 24 weeks. I'm feeling pretty damn good.
Right?
Yeah!
Like, we've just come off of the World Endurance Championship opening round at Spa-Francorchamps, which was awesome, and we'll do a proper wrap-up there of that event a bit later on. But, like, the endurance racing, it just doesn't stop.
No, and there's only so many days I can take off work.
There's almost so many hours to catch up on it when you do miss it as well. I'm still trying to catch up on everything I missed last weekend. I mean, there's still DTM to watch. There's still I just finished watching the V8s as well. There's still Blank Pain to watch. And like, oh my god.
You see, the first weekend of May is usually one of the most busiest weekends in motorsport because that's when everything usually starts back up or has their second round. And I only had to work 4 hours, and it didn't help that my internet was out that early part in the morning. I still have stuff to catch up on. I have Blank Pain, DTM, MotoGP, all that stuff.
Oh, MotoGP as well. I forgot about that. Oh, no. You just added another 3 hours of stuff. Oh, god damn it. Oh, I'm not happy. Not happy. No, I am extremely happy. This is brilliant. This is probably my favorite 24-hour event of the year, actually.
It's the event that I already took the days off for this event. I had the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday requested. But this event, Le Mans will probably not make me take off any days off because I just find an N24 more enjoyable. Hot take.
But this is right up your alley, though. You are, like, we joke about it, but you are the obscure racing guy. And as far as top-level sports car obscurity, this is like the hotbed of it. So this is you and your element. I'm just going to be palming it off to you this entire podcast. I hope you know that.
Yeah, this and the Palenga 1,006 kilometer race because of the TV deal with TV6 in Lithuania.
Okay. We should actually talk properly about this event. So what is this event? This is the Nürburgring 24 Hours. It's on the combined Nürburgring GP plus the Nordschleife, making a 25-kilometer track through Green Hell. If you don't know what Green Hell is, you should look it up because it is the longest permanent racetrack in the world and possibly the most iconic in terms of, like, I don't know. It's this really weird sort of niche that it's carved out for itself where everyone wants to test a track, a car there, and everyone wants to have the lap record there, and, like, everyone wants to race there, but you'll never see, like, a top-level race go there because it's just too crazy.
It also helps that there's the historic element to it. I mean, it's been there since, I believe, the 1920s, if not the early 1910s.
Mm.
Or late 1910s, and also the Gran Turismo games did help it a lot.
And Forza, like, as well.
Yep, and I should say almost every single sim imaginable.
And yeah, nowadays.
Some people just can't believe their eyes when they see, wait a minute, like, legit top-tier sports car racing actually races at this track? Like, we only see it in games. And plus you used to have, like, an actual FIA World Championship race there with the World Touring Car Championship, and now it's just the World Touring Car Cup. But still, you have a world racing series that travels around the world that still travels to the Nordschleife, and it acts as a support to one of the greatest events on Earth.
Mm. So what series sort of informs this race? Like, it's a standalone race run by ADAC, which is the sports car GT organization.
Whole racing organization in Germany.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a series that sort of informs this race as well. They don't just have, like, one event a year at the Nürburgring, right?
Yeah, this, and to start it off, this event is standalone, like you said, Flood. It's the ADAC, which is the governing body of motorsports in Germany, and also sponsored by Zurich. Which I'm not exactly what Zurich is, but it sponsors the event. It sponsors the number boards of the cars. I believe There's also the DMSB, which makes kind of like the rules of the Nürburgring Nordschleife. This whole event centrals around the VLN Championship, which is basically you have about 8 or 9 rounds, most of them 4-hour races. They have a 6-hour race in June. That's basically the same thing as the Nürburgring 24, just shorter. And they don't cut the first part of the track, which is the Mercedes Arena, and they don't go through the Dunlop hairpin that extends out on track. They use that little shortcut into, I believe, the Schumacher curve.
Just behind the Schumacher curve, actually.
Just behind it, yeah. And basically nothing else has changed. There is rumors, though, but this has been a year ago, that they wanted to have the Nürburgring 24 as part of the VLN Championship, but they were going to kind of do a WEC move when they're going to have the N24 as the end of the championship. Obviously, nothing much has gone through so far,
what?
But I mean, yeah, that was some, not so, that was some rumor going around a year ago.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, as the end of the VLN championship?
Correct. So the VLN was...
Okay.
A pseudo winter series.
Ah, okay. You got me real confused for a moment there. But that hasn't happened yet, so it's still just a standalone, but the VLN series kind of informs the race. But
and some VLN races do get more entries than this race.
Really?
VLN 1, we had like 190 cars.
Wow! I thought that this being sort of the crown jewel in terms of top-level sports car racing on the Nordschleife would get the most entries, but wow, really? I didn't realize that.
To be fair, this is a more prestigious, more, let's say, top-tier event, so the restrictions on entries might be a bit more, let's say, restrictive in VLN. Yeah. And plus, you have these great, you know, drivers, these top-tier drivers that are racing the GT3 drivers this weekend. Some of those extra cars could have been filled with those Porsche Caymans or some BMWs by their top-tier drivers, because in order to race at the Nürburgring 24, or let's say a GT3 at the Nürburgring 24, you have to do a VLN race, or I think you can, a Nürburgring 24 qualifying race qualifies as well. You have to drive it in a slower car that's not a GT3 to get more experience around the track, which is perfectly fine by me. And then I believe it only takes about one – I believe it's either one race or a certain amount of hours behind the car they have to do. But then they get to move up and expand their license a bit.
Yeah, so there's like a separate licensing system just for the Nürburgring, the Nordschleife rather. Yeah. That's really
interesting. It doesn't matter what international grade you have. You could be a top-tier Formula 1 star like Fernando Alonso. You would still have to drive around in a little Porsche Cayman for a race or two in order to move up to a GT3 car.
I did not know that I needed to see this in my life, but I need to see this in my life.
Andre Lauder actually did a Porsche Cayman.
I actually read up on this earlier. It wasn't he might have done it in a Porsche, but I know a few years ago he actually raced in a Lexus for like when Toyota Gazoo first built one of the Lexus lower tier Lexus cars, and he was actually put in that car for his first 24 hour race.
Yeah,
which was like in 2011 or something.
Really?
Yeah,
so this is before his Porsche's deal.
Before, yeah, well, when he was with Audi. Anyway, what we should do now, we talked a little bit about the lower classes. We should give you an actual overview of how the classes work in the VLN and in the 24 Hours of Nürburgring. Because what you'll see if you look at the timing screens, and you should be looking at the timing screens in this race and listening to Paul Truswell, who's basically a supercomputer with legs, you'll see a lot of numbers, a lot of T's, a lot of classes without T's, a few cup classes, a lot of SP classes, and some other numbers and letters, and to me, when I first looked at it, I'm like, this means nothing. What does it mean? But it actually is a little bit elegant in a way. So how about you take us through the way that the SP classes work to start with?
Yeah, the very unfortunate thing about this class system is that it can be very hard to find out what those classes mean or what cars are eligible for those classes online. I had to go through supplementary regulations PDF file to get this information. So from SP2 to SP5, there is basically a bunch of like CC regulations, like your car has to be within this amount. And of course, if you see a T after the number, that means it's a turbo. SP6 is basically the same, you know, same philosophy. Only vehicles with approval as a car with close to production engine. So SP6 to SP8 are basically the same as the SP2 through SP5, but they have to be close to a production engine. I believe SP2 through SP5, I mean, as long as it fits the regulations, as long as it fits the engine size, it's fine.
So this is kind of like an old school sort of class system that I used to run at Le Mans, where it's all displacement based.
Yeah, like 3,500 up to 4,000 for SP7 and all that. Yeah.
Yep.
Then cool. We have SP Pro, which cars required some loss in translation. Cars are required to be fitted with a restrictor, and this is for vehicles without approval as cars with close to production engines. So SP Pro is basically you can run what you want, but you gotta have a little restrictor in your engine to fit it down and make it a bit fair for SP.
Okay, cool. So in sort of relative pace terms, you kind of as you increase the displacement, of course, you're generally going to be getting faster, right? So if I'm driving, say, an SP5 car, where would that put me in terms of, like, would I be at around TCR pace, or would I be at GT4 pace, or what would I be looking at?
I'm going to take a look. Not too sure, actually. I think it'll be slower than the GT. It might be a little bit faster than a TCR. But slower than a GT4.
Okay.
But that's very, very, very first, very
I
first
put,
guessing.
I kind of
very
put
rough
on the
estimate.
Spot
yeah, very rough estimate.
Cool. So that's the most of the SP, but there's a few little extra SP classes on top of that, aren't there?
Yep. This is basically your main guys that are going to be up running at the front. SP9, GT3. That's easy enough to understand. What you might recognize or might not recognize on a timing screen that might be new to you is SP9LG. Now, the LG stands for last generation. So you might see cars like the Bentley, like the old Bentley Continentals, a BMW Z4. I think even the Aston Martin Vantage might even qualify
Yeah,
as
I
one.
Did see a old Vantage on the entry list earlier. And yep, I found it again.
It's the only Vantage as a GT3 car, but I believe it's a 2016 spec. So, okay, that's understandable. But then you have SP10, which is SRO GT4 means SRO allowed it. I believe SRO does balancing performance for it, I guess, too. These cars are mandated to run hand-cooked tires. And the GT3 class, and basically for every single class except for GT4 and TCR, those classes have to run hand-cooked tires, but for GT4 and TCR. But the rest of the classes, you're free of tire choice. There's some Lamborghini Super Trofeo car running GD tires. That's an Asian tire company. Then you have Michelin, Dunlops, etc. It's fair game. Falcon tires, of course, with the Falcon tire guys. So it's basically a free-for-all in the tire department.
Cool. So why are the SP10s, the GT4s, and the TCRs only allowed to run the hand cooks? Is that because that's a sort of port from the 24-hour series, the Creventic series?
I'm not sure there's any relation to that. I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't investigated the matter any further. But it might be because that's how they run VLN.
Because I know I know that in Creventic, because the Hankook is the sponsor, they are the sole tire provider. So yeah, I wonder if there's any connection there.
And that might not be a connection to the 24-hour series, but Hankook might be kind of sponsoring these classes. But that's just, you know, rough estimate again for me.
Cool. Okay. There's one more SP class that we haven't quite talked about yet, and this is, I think, one of the cooler ones, even though it is very, very small in numbers. That one is SPX, and the reason that it's special, I guess, is because it's sort of a class that kind of catches anything that doesn't quite fit in with any of the other classes, and especially it looks at prototypes of GT4 and GT3 type machinery. So I think there's three cars in SPX. Is that right? I know there's at least two. I've seen two. So the two ones that I've seen definitely are the Renault RS01. So from the former Renault Cup series. So it's basically almost a GT3 spec car, and then
I believe the car itself, if you take off all the BOP and all the stuff, the car alone is faster than a GT3 car.
Wow, that's kind of scary. And then the other car that always drums up a lot of discussion around this event is the Scuderia Glickenhaus 003, which is in the SPX class, balanced against the GT3 class cars, and is basically a GT3 prototype. It's ridiculous. It's a car that you can drive on the racetrack and then drive home.
Yeah, basically. I mean, Scuderia Cameron Glickenhaus is a team, I believe, will be the team name and also the name of the cars. And this is kind of an American-run team. You have an American team owner, so if you're an American with no dog in the fight, I mean, the Glickenhaus is, despite how foreign it may sound to the American, it's still kind of a home team for us Americans to cheer for, you know. So
and just because they're in SPX, it doesn't mean they're not competitive. They took pole last year.
It was very shocking. I made the huge mistake of kind of sleeping through the qualifying session. I watched, it was a 3-hour classic car race. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to get some sleep. I'm going to get a bunch of sleep before the 24-hour race so I can stay up all 24 hours. I wake up at like 1 in the morning. Wait a minute. Glickenhaus. What the? How?
Like, how? And like, we haven't talked about it yet, but the GT3 class in this series, in this race, is insane. So the fact that I put Glickenhaus on pole was just. It was ridiculous. One of the craziest things to happen in the race last year, and it was a crazy race last year. Anyway, we're still going to finish off talking about the classes. There's like, what, six more classes that we haven't talked about yet?
About.
Okay.
There's the AT class, which is basically, hey, your car doesn't follow the normal fuel regulations. You have a different kind of fueling going on, which is basically like liquid gas, natural gas. So it's basically like the cars like the old Chrysler Viper, which it was called back then. Or Chrysler Viper, I believe was what it was called in Europe.
Yep.
So that's on the entry list this year.
Is there any diesel cars?
There might be a few BMWs, the BMW diesel.
Okay.
Those sometimes run in the Creventic races.
I see here that there's a Ford Focus in AT, there's a Ford Mustang in AT as well, and I'm pretty sure
that sounds about right.
Also saw I'm trying to find it. I'm pretty sure I also saw a Porsche Cayman in AT. Oh. Yes, it is.
Okay.
The Care for Climate car number 420. Mate.
Alternative fuels.
Oh, and there's also
we'll jump off.
And there's also another Care for Climate car, a 911 GT3 Cup car, which is in AT. So I wonder what's going on with those.
Okay, so that's interesting. Okay, so basically, tweet Paul Trusswell Thursday during practice.
Yeah, let's see what they come up with. And then there's we've mentioned TCR, so that's worldwide TCR spec.
Yep. Compliance with the TCR International Series regulations, which might explain the Hankook tires on their end, because I think TCR as a whole uses Hankooks.
We can always tweet these guys and find out. And then there's three cup classes for three different types of cars as well. So you've got Cayman GT4 trophy, so GT4 Caymans, basically. A BMW...
For anyone looking for the class name, it'd be Cup 3.
Yeah, for some reason, the class name and the actual classifications are a bit different. And then Cup 5 is the BMW M235i Cup, so they're all running BMW M235s.
Of course, that'd be Cup 5, which is actually a pretty famous class in this race.
Really? Why?
Oh, everybody loves the Beamers. I mean yeah. And plus, if you watch the VLNs in the past, they can provide some very close finishes at the end, and they usually like beating and banging on each other.
So they're basically like VLN touring cars. This is the British Touring Car Championship at VLN, the BMW Touring Car Championship.
Like, if you watch VLN, usually these guys lead the third group out.
Cool. Okay. And then the final cup class is Cup X, which is KTM Crossbows, which I think run close to, or if not exactly, GT4 spec in this class.
There is a single make KTM Crossbow Cup that runs in, like, Austria and Germany and Central and Eastern Europe.
Yeah, and that's what this is.
And before it was a GT4, it was just that. So I don't... doesn't say GT4 on here, so I'm not going to assume anything. But I would assume the same thing as you, Fly. I believe assume it's very, very close to the GT4 models they have out on the track right now. And these three classes that we just mentioned all have a thing in common. They're separate championships.
Oh, really?
That's why if you see, if you look up the supplementary regulations, if you see Class Cup 5, BMW M25i Racing Cup, they're individual championships that's just disguise themselves as a class in this whole big race, which is also which, if you want to get technical, there is a series that's racing in the Nürburgring 24, and this would be these three right here.
That's real interesting, huh? I did not know that.
So if you want to get technical, the N24 is not a standalone race for three classes only.
Of course not. That would be way too simple. And finally, we have the V classes. So what are the V classes?
So basically, these are VLN production cars, which I assume these are less powerful, I believe, than the SP cars. The SP 2 through 5. So these less powerful, but it's the same ideal. The same idea and philosophies of the SP class, which is engine displacement. It goes by engine displacement. So V2... through V6.
Yeah.
And if you see a T under it, of course, that's turbo. So, yeah, these are cars, basically VLN regulars, slower than the SP 2 through 5 cars. And these guys, I believe, usually don't get too much entries in them.
Yeah, I can only see a few very high in the entry list. And it seems to be a lot of, like, Porsche Caymans, BMWs, like old model cars. Yeah.
And those Porsche Caymans not on GT4 spec. You're wondering what the Porsche Caymans look like, think of pre-GT4 Continental Tire World Challenge when the ST class is around. That's what Porsche Caymans are going to get in this class.
Ooh, I've just seen something that I'm really looking forward to. There's two cars in V2T, so this is the smallest turbo classification. This is basically the smallest class, the slowest class in the race. We have an Opel Astra J and a Renault Megane RS. All of a sudden, I am interested. I am super interested in how this class goes. I don't want to see a Renault Megane running around the Nürburgring. It's going to be amazing.
I believe there's Opel Calibras as well in those races. I believe there might be two of them.
Oh, this is awesome. This race, it just brings out the best random stuff. Oh, I love it. There's like Clio RSs in this race as well. There's the Calibra, number 124 in the entry list for those playing along. There's two Corolla 8 Altis. Oh, we took both of them from Thailand. That's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, I know those cars.
Oh, this is...
they always come around for this Wonderful Race.
This is a lot of fun. Oh, I'm so excited. So as you can see, we've got everything from the latest in GT3 machinery to a Renault Clio RS and a Megane RS and everything in between.
And the Flappy Foxtail.
And the Foxtail! We haven't even mentioned the Foxtail yet! Oh, I was so sad when it went out in the first hour last year.
Do you want to hear the story of it?
Let's hear the story of the Foxtail. Okay. Tell us the story, Chris.
So, in the middle of the 1980s, the Opel Manta was considered a badass car in Germany. Or it might be the opposite. It might have been like the irony of badass car. Anyway, it's either of those two. But anyway, this car has been running for so long that the car is basically the same except the insides. And they just slapped the Foxtail on it, and it became an instant cult classic.
So what's the significance of the Foxtail?
I think they might have did just for giggles.
Yeah,
but there might be more significance to it, which will probably some German will correct us in the comments.
It has become a bit of a cult classic with the VLN and the Nürburgring 24. I'm not sure if it races in the VLN anymore, but definitely the Nürburgring 24.
It races in some.
Yeah,
I'm not sure it races in every single race, but it races in some.
And
it also won its class in years past in recent memory. I can't remember which one, but in every 2013 through 2017, I believe it won a class.
It didn't win last year because it was damaged and broken. Yep. But yeah, it's a bit of a cult hero, and I think it was the first like motorsport related novelty Twitter account I actually ended up finding. There's someone made a Twitter account for the Foxtail, the actual tail that hangs from the antenna of the car, and it is hilarious. So you should definitely get on that if you haven't already.
Is it kind of like Bathurst Rue?
That's one of my favorites as well. And things like what's another one?
Lounsey's car.
Yeah, fun fact, I actually met the person who runs the Lounsey's Car account. They're great. They didn't recognize me until I tweeted about meeting a group of people that they were involved with afterwards. And they're like, oh, that's you.
It's also, at least for a NASCAR side thing, it's the orange cone.
Oh, that was great. Novelty Twitter accounts are great. Get on Twitter, guys. But anyway, so we've given you a rundown of the classes. Yeah, so in relative terms, things like the sort of the TCR class will be a step below the GT4 class, which will be a step below, of course, the GT3. And then a lot of things like the cup cars will kind of fit in between these sort of things. Like, they'll be close. Yeah. Yeah, so they'll be close to GT4, but maybe a little bit slower in some places, maybe a little bit faster. As far as SP classes, generally the higher number is going to be faster, but I have no idea where the V classes will fit into anything.
Well, except for SP10, which is GT4, it'll be slower.
Yeah, of course.
So
if you struggle to follow along, try and maybe like pick out one car from each class or one car from like, say, a group of SP classes, so that way you can just kind of have something to follow along and something to invest in, because it is way more fun when following these races to sort of have a vested interest in each of these classes. So that way you can go, hey, I wonder what's happening in V2T with that Renault Megane and that Opel Astra. I wonder who's in front now.
And the best part about this race is that they usually just reserve time to just look at these cars through the camera angles.
Yeah, it is really nice. And they treat it like a big club day that everyone gets a stake in. And I think that's a really good way to treat it, because it kind of is for a lot of these guys. Like, if you remove the SP9 class, and then even maybe parts of the more professional parts of SP10, it is just a group of guys and girls putting a car together to race around the Nordschleife for 24 hours. Like, who even cares about the result? It's just they want to be there, and they want to be experienced in it.
In the TV side of things, they treat professionally. I mean, they have a bunch of cameras. They have a full-on working pit reporter crew. But they have fun with it, at least the German side of things. I remember last year, is getting into the dusk part of the race, I believe it was a Toyota 86, and the German pit reporter crew actually helped them do a pit stop.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then immediately after that, they pricked the ear of a woman pit reporter to get a blood sample on live national television in Germany. They don't screw around.
Why? Why is that relevant?
You see, Flood, in the number of green 24 land, if you see those bright red Vodafone Deutschland pit reporter shirts.
Yeah.
Fire suits. Some wild stuff's going to go down, and someone needs adult supervision.
I think that just sums up the event and like sort of the feel and the culture around the event as well, because the track is 25 k's long. It basically wraps like three towns within its radius, so it just turns into a 24-hour party that these three towns just sort of get into. And, like, you'll see people up near Brunchen with barbecues and, like, camping gear. Like, they'll just be having a freaking, like, a cookout on the corner of the track. And they'll just have, like, a party there and everything. It's really, it's on my bucket list of places to go. Because I just want to be a part of the atmosphere. I just want to be a part of this 24-hour long racing disco, man.
And some streaming tips. During the night, turn on the Deutsch stream, because that's where the wild stuff's coming out of the hat.
Oh, but I want to listen to Nick Damon and just be an idiot.
The English stream doesn't have the pit reporters.
Oh, I guess. Anyway, you know, while all this partying is happening, there is actually a race on track. And as I may have mentioned, I'm not sure if I did, the reason that this race is my favorite 24-hour event is because in the past few years, the track action, especially as it builds towards the finish, has been some of the best sports car racing I think I've ever seen. I think last year and the year before especially, but even beyond that, like, you'd think a 25-kilometer track with some, like, crazy classes and some classes having barely any entries and, you know, the extent of traffic over the course of that long, like minimum pit stop times as well, which we may talk about a bit more in depth. You know, you think cars would get spread out, but it's not like that. There's consistently, even if it's a minute or a minute and a half, there's consistently investment into the race and personal investment into the race, because the action sort of builds towards an amazing crescendo. And I think the 2016 finish, while it wasn't as balls to the wall crazy as it was last year, I think that's my favorite finish to a 24-hour race that I've seen, because the last 3 or 4 hours was spent by the guys in the commentary booth and even me at home setting up a spreadsheet to track the stint lengths and the average lap times of the three cars at the front. Because there was questions over fuel, whether or not they get there on fuel, the minimum pit stop time thing, dependent on laps. And it was just such a slow burn to the finish, and it came to an absolute crescendo on the last lap, where it was Mauro Engel, and I'm trying to remember the guy who came second. Do you remember off the top of your head? It was Black Falcon. I feel like it might have been Yelmer Berman, maybe.
It was definitely another Mercedes. I think what made that finish even better is the huge, huge shouts to the TV production, because they saw the drama that was happening in the pits, and they walked this camera, this pit road camera. They walked along with this guy from the team that just got spun to race control to just build up the drama for people watching the race. And that's where TV production just made its mark right there. Yep. For the N24.
It wasn't Yelmer Berman, sorry. I think it was Christian Hohenadel. But what happened was they crossed the line with 20 seconds left, both of them, and there was a gap of about 3 seconds at the end of the race. The car that was leading the HTP motorsport car, sorry, I got them the other way around. It was the Black Falcon car chasing the HTP motorsport car. and it was going down to the last lap, and the Black Falcon car was storming through and had, you know, fresh tires, Mario Engel behind the wheel, and it was looking like it was going to be an absolute close finish. And as it turns out, the pass for the lead of the race was made after the 24 hours had finished on the last lap. And even with that happening, it was still only a 4 second gap at the end of 24 hours where, and like, as I said, it had been tracking this battle for 3 hours to sort of see, and they never met on track until that moment. And that's the sort of payoff that you get with this race. And it was just awesome. I remember how crazy just the chat room was at that point in time. We were absolutely losing our minds. Everyone was losing our minds. The team director marched down to freaking race control and then got there and then just kind of went, I don't even have a case. I can't do this.
Vodafone Deutschland pit reporter thing. One of them actually gets to wave the checkered flag as well.
Oh wow, that's real cool.
Yeah,
I like that. I like that. So that's my favorite memory of the Nürburgring 24. I mean, you know, besides the banter in the commentary booth in the Dutch one as well. You know what I mean? In the German one. But I think last year deserves a mention as well. Do you want to take us through what happened last year, Chris?
So, basically, the last few hours of the race, it was between... can't even remember who it was between. I know that Land Motorsport...
Land Motorsport, you know, Rover Racing, and WRT Audi.
That's right. And Land Motorsport, was it a problem with their fueling? That they had a mistake on, or first it was a puncture.
It wasn't a puncture. So they came up to the second to last round of stops, and I think Land was leading at this point, and then they had an electrical gremlin on their outlap. And one of the quirks about using the combined circuit is that you can do a lap of the GT circuit and then come back into the pits, and it just won't count. So they were able to get the car back to the pits and reset it, but that put them some minute and a half. Sorry, I think it was more than that. I think it was 3 or 4 minutes behind.
Yeah.
But then it got crazy.
Yeah, so I believe it was their last pit stop. They had a mistake with the fueling, if I'm right with that.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, the TV screen shows up, and oh my god! The back half of the track is wet. And so Land was like, okay, we got this. And it's like, okay, take off the slicks. Take off the slicks. We're going for wets. And guess what? They came back and won the thing.
And it was absolutely crazy because that entire weekend, and I'm talking from first practice of the support event on Wednesday or whenever it was, through to that moment, it had been dry, clear, and sunny. The entire
event. It was a very rare chance of rain that day as well.
And all of a sudden, from Flugplatz to the Foxhole, which is like towards the latter half of the circuit, it was drenched, and I'm talking torrential rain. But that moment in the pit stop where Land Motorsport had messed their pit stop up actually played perfectly into their hands because the two cars that they were chasing had already been through the pits. And so they'd already put on slicks and committed to putting on slicks.
Well, the thing is, I believe that TV shot of the huge wet track by the helicopter cameras, that was before. Like, that was, did they put on slicks, then that camera shot up, then they...
I feel like the shot came first, but they didn't see, there was another shot in between, which I think there was cars going off, and that's when Land Motorsport came in. So I think that Land Motorsport got the opportunity to see the fact that there was cars going off, and they're like, okay, it's wet's time. And it played straight into their hands. I mean, they led something like 78% of the racing laps. I think it was, they led something like 107 out of 134. And had this problem towards the end of the race, which kind of stunted them. And then they came back because of that pit lane mistake. Let's not forget, they made a mistake in the pits. So that's why they had the chance to put the wets on, because they made a mistake. It was so dumb.
And to put this into perspective, if this was the olden days, they wouldn't have known that the track was wet because it wasn't raining in the Grand Prix section of the track at all.
It was, It's like the it's not like the Nordschleife has its own climate sometimes. Like, it'll be torrential rain on one half of the circuit, and then it'll be bright and sunny on the other half. And you're just like, well, I guess we put on Inters? Maybe?
It's sort of weird, and it's sort of just weird in a way. And this is a bit of my meteorology nerd coming out, because if you look at the radar of like thunderstorms, for example, and it was like, oh my god, if I was 5 miles away, I would have got that storm. Well, the Nordschleife is 25 miles long, and it crosses over kilometers, yeah, and it extends over three towns. So it could be raining in one section, storming, like a shower in one section, absolutely dumping it down, thunder and lightning in another, and then just sunny in another town. That's just crazy.
It's one of the most fantastic quirks of this event, and you combine this track with the crazy weather that you get in the Eifel Mountains, and it can go sideways pretty damn quick. I remember, again, in 2016, that was the year that they actually had to red flag the race because it had hailed over half of the circuit.
Yeah, and iced over the circuit a bit.
Yeah, so the cars were literally came to a stop on the circuit and couldn't get up some of the sections because there was literally no grip. They were on, because it had come in so fast that they were on slicks as well. And I think someone had the fantastic idea of putting the string of cars going off at Adenauerforst
for the Benny Hill music.
Yes, the Benny Hill music. And that was one of the because there was an extended red flag stoppage, because not only did they have to wait for the track to clear to sort of, you know, de-ice, they also had to recover all the cars that were now stranded, stopped in the middle of the track, and bring them back to the grid. And yeah, we had an extended red flag stoppage, and that was the funniest thing to come out of that. It was ridiculous.
That's when Joe Bradley told his little Formula Ford story at Snetterton.
That was great. Yeah, if you, I think that someone actually posted that in the sub. The long and the short of it is they tell like a 5 or 6 minute long story about deciding to whether or not to put rains or, wets or slicks on a drying track in a Formula Ford race. And then at the end of it, the co-commentator goes, well, now welcome back to the race where we've been going for another 20 minutes. And just everyone cracked up. Anyway,
speaking of weather flood. Guess what it's supposed to do on Sunday?
I feel like you want me to say it's going to be nice, bright, and sunny for the entire weekend, but somehow that doesn't seem right.
No chance of storms. Actually, there's a very big chance of rain.
Oh, that's going to be terrifying. I can't imagine plunging through the Eifel Mountains on green hell in a torrential downpour. Like, I just freak out. I would just absolutely freak out. Potentially in the middle of the night as well. You could potentially be doing this in the middle of the night.
It could be worse. I've been through experiences where it's middle of April, but there's a blizzard outside and I have to go to work. So
no, stuff that. I'm just going to put on another 3 rugs and yeah. More myself up now just because of you saying that. We're the worst. So what's next on our agenda? We've talked about the weather. We've talked about past races. Oh, so yeah, as we said, this race is sort of not really kind of informed by the VLN series. And the VLN tends to be a good form guide for what's going to be happening for this race. So we've had 2 rounds of the VLN so far plus the qualifying race. Is that right?
Yeah. So, yep. The first round of the VLN was absolutely dominated by the number 911 Grello Manti Racing Porsche. And then, second round of the VLN, I believe, was won by the 99 Rova Racing Team. Or 98. I think it was 99.
One of the Rova cars, anyway.
Yeah, one of the Rova cars. And the Nürburgring 24 qualifying race is Black Falcon. Won it, but not without any ease, though, as Rover Racing was pressuring them really, really hard. Now, we have these 3 races done and dusted. We have some entries already confirmed in the top 30 qualifying Super Pole session, which this is the entries advancing from VLN 1 and 2, number 911 Manti Racing, the number 22 Wackenspiegel Team Monschau Ferrari, number
Wait, there's a Ferrari in this race? I completely missed that.
I believe there's two from the same team. Now, here's the kicker. Rinaldi Racing actually supports this team.
What?
Yeah, and guess what? This team actually won a VLN race last year.
What? No. Ferraris don't race in this race. It's like German manufacturers only.
Yeah. I mean, of course they'll never go here because Ferrari's like, it's too dangerous. But Wackenspiegel doesn't care. Or yeah. Rinaldi Racing, to be more exact.
I'd never realized that before. I didn't even... What?
Yeah, I believe... I don't remember them being in the 24-hour race last year, but they're coming here this year. Another entry advancing from the VLN rounds is number 102, Falkenhorst Motorsports BMW M6. Number 47, Mercedes-AMG Team HTP. Number 9-1-12, so both Bantais are automatically...
Yeah,
you know, into the top 30 qualifying session. Then you have both HTP Motorsport Mercedes, number 4 and number 48. And that's all that came from VLN rounds 1 and 2.
Okay.
The people that... From the 24-hour qualification weekend. Fricadelli Racing Team, number 31, Porsche.
Oh, I love the Fricadelli. Anyway, continue.
Number 7, Aston Martin Racing. Yes, the Aston Martin GT3... automatically in the qualifying session.
That's pretty cool. That's a real cool, actually.
They finished like top 5th or 6th or 7th, somewhere around there, in the qualifying race. And guess who they have in the car? Niki Team and most of the Aston Martin factory guys.
Just a quick overview of that car. Yeah, most of the Aston Martin factory guys. It's got Maxime Martin, Marco Sorensen, Niki Team, and Darren Turner. That's like the Dane train plus Darren Turner again. Except Martin's not Danish, he's German. Belgian, rather. That's like half their WEC team.
Yeah.
What?
And then, actually, surprisingly, this is the first Black Falcon car we come across in the qualifying session, the number 5 car.
Yep.
Then you have number 99 Rover Racing.
And I see that the 98 made it as well, right at the bottom of the list.
Right at the bottom. Oh, these next two are fun ones. Number 705, Scuderia Cameron Glickenhaus.
Yep, so that was the SPX car that we were talking about earlier. And that's got Andreas Simonsen behind the wheel this weekend.
So, and then they have number 44, Falcon Motorsports IMSA fans. Get ready. It's a Falcon Motorsports Porsche.
Oh, this makes me so happy. Love that. And, that livery just works on everything. I think they run a BMW as well, and it just looks amazing.
They are running a BMW.
Oh, it's amazing.
Then they had number 8, Audi Sport Team WRT. And then, of course, Flood mentioned number 98, Rover Racing at the bottom of the list. So those guys, that's 15 of the 30. The rest of the 15 have to be decided this Thursday and Friday in the qualifying sessions.
Okay, so the rest of the... It's going to be basically all SP9 cars, right? Let's be real here. So the rest of the SP9 class basically has to fight over those last 15 positions. And then, so what is this top 30 qualifying as opposed to the other qualifying sessions?
So you already discussed how you can automatically advance into it. You can do well in the VLN races or do well in the qualifying race. This is basically, you get 2 laps.
Okay.
And of course you get sent out into a can't remember how many intervals it is.
I feel like it's 30 seconds,
I believe, sounds right. And the kicker is that it doesn't matter what you do in qualifying. The starting order of the top 30 qualifying session is all down to a lottery system. So they kind of like pull things and see where you end up. And all drivers are mandated to attend this. Which sounds reasonable.
Huh, that's really interesting. So it's basically, it's a, basically like a super pole then. So they have the entire track to themselves. But not because, not exactly,
literally,
because a super pole.
That's the whole point.
Yeah, a super pole at the Nordschleife for 30 cars would take literally like 10 hours.
Yeah, so they have them in about 30-second intervals, and in theory, no car should come across another car, and they should get a track or a lap or two to themselves. But sometimes that's not always the case. Sometimes we see cars have miscues. Some years, I think we even saw like very, very huge shockers and things. So. Yeah,
I remember, I think it was 2016, where the Manti Porsche, which was the first car drawn out of the lot, actually flipped it on the first lap of the top 30 pole. So it can get a little crazy. It can get just a little, little scary. It's a really cool thing to watch as well, because they just go absolutely bonkers down. So, like, this is the best GT3 drivers in the world on the craziest GT3 track in the world, going as fast as they absolutely can. And it's the coolest part of the weekend besides the actual race, I think.
And the weird part is that in the Nürburgring 24 qualifying race, they actually had a top 30 qualifying for the Nürburgring 24 qualifying race that they're trying to race and do good in to get into the top 30 qualifying for the actual 24-hour race.
What?
I'm sorry for the mental gymnastics you guys had to go through.
So they have a top 30 qualifying to get into the qualifying race, to get into the top 30 qualifying for the actual race.
Well, it's the same thing. Many people are entered into the qualifying race. I don't know what the criteria... I think maybe your VLN thing it gets you a ticket into that as well. But yeah, it's mental gymnastics that this organization likes to put us through.
I'm so confused.
Yep.
So should we talk about...
It confuses everyone.
Yeah, okay. At least everyone's with me. So should we talk about some of the cars and the drivers? Because at least in the SP9 class, because we've talked a fair bit about what can go on, and I feel like we need to just have a bit of a look at how crazy the quality of the field we have here will be. Because there are some cars with driver lineups that I would never have expected to ever see, because they're just that good. The combination of some of the quality that we've got here is just ridiculous. So, should we start from the top? Or should we just pick and choose?
Let's pick and choose. I mean, it's sometimes if you just go from the top, we kind of, sometimes you just go through every car.
Okay, that's a good point. First thing I want to talk about as a Porsche fan is the fact that not only are Porsche bringing, I think it's 7 or 8 cars in SP9 alone, 7 or 8 Porsche 911 GT3 cars, they're also bringing along a grand total of 43 cars for this race.
Yeah, that's like a third of the field.
It's a ridiculous effort. And I mean, a few of them are in production, a few of them are in like the Cayman Cup 3 class. But still, 43 cars from a single brand is crazy. But on closer inspection, when you look at the SP9 teams that they're bringing, the GT3 cars, this is like a who's who of Porsche factory drivers here. And I'm just going to pick out 3 cars that I really want to focus on, because I feel like if a Porsche is going to win, it's going to be one of these 3 cars. So the first 2 cars are the Manti Racing cars, the Grellos. One of them has Kevin Escht, Romain Dumas, Laurent Vanthoor, and Earl Bamba. Like, just straight off the bat, that's like a ridiculous driver grouping. I honestly can't believe that they got those 4 drivers in one car. And then you look at the other Manti car, and it's got Rickard Leitz, Patrick Pile, Frederick Makovicki, and Nick Tandy.
I noticed that they have Earl Bamber as a guy from Malaysia.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but I'm glad that you did. Bam Bam from Malaysia. I bet Kiwi's real happy about that. Don't hurt me, Kiwi. You know you love it. So, Like, I'm surprised they just don't have a car which is, like, Mark Webber, Brendan Hartley, and Timo Bernhard as well. Because, like, they got every other LMP1 driver that they've ever had. Jeez.
Well, to be fair, Brendan Hartley is now technically a Honda factory driver. And I don't know what kind of restrictions he gets placed under.
Yeah,
and Mark Webber gets fired from racing.
Yeah, but just let me have this.
I'm sorry to ruin your pipe dream, Flood.
Stop ruining it. the final car that I want to look at in the from the Porsche stable, at least, is the Kuss Team 75 Bernhard car. This is a team run by Timo Bernhard. He's moved now into race team management. And the drivers he's put together rivals the quality of the Manti cars. You've got Michael Christensen, Jörg Bergmeister, and on top of those two guys, who have been Porsches forever, you have up-and-coming Porsche factory driver Matteo Cairoli and Andre Lotterer.
I'm sorry, who is this Michael Christensen kid again?
I thought we left that behind, Chris. For those who don't know our podcast last year, Chris completely forgot who Michael Christensen was. Like, completely. Yep. And, like, those three cars have enough star power in themselves, but looking further afield, you have Lars Kern, the guy who set the Nürburgring production car lap record in the Porsche 911 GT2 RS in the third Manti car. You have Wolf Hensler and Matt Campbell in one of the Fricadelli cars. In the other Fricadelli car, you've got Norbert Seidler, Marco Seyfried, and Matteo Jaminet, which is a really, really good car. You've got the Falken car, which got Klaus Backler, Sven Müller, Martin Rackinger, and Dirk Werner, which is another really strong car. Lucas Lures in one of these cars. It's like Porsche just kind of went to every single employee that they had, every single driver employee that they had, and said, "Hey, you guys want to drive in this? You sure? Come along." It's crazy. It's crazy how much driver talent, and that's just Porsche.
And Manti seems to me, at least, doesn't put all their eggs in one basket. Yeah, they have a bunch of their main guys in that 911 and 912, which is going to be the Grello liveried cars. And they have, like, the 12 car. It's kind of a backup car. I mean, it's where their less experienced kind of gentleman drivers go. I mean, Lars Kern and Otto Klose, I believe, are of an older age. And this is going to be sort of the orange and white car that Manti usually runs at their Creventic events. And so Porsche is definitely coming out swinging, and they did get, I believe, a BOP break.
Yep.
A little weight break along with the BMW. So that's definitely going to help them in the end. We're going to have to see until top 30 time to see what that weight break does them. But I do have to say, another thing that's catching my eye is the Car Collection Motorsport kind of stepping out of their element of the Creventic races and coming on, and they have some interesting drivers. I mean, they have ARC Bratislava guy, Miro Konopka. They also have Simon Trummer and Pierre Kaffer.
Oh, that's a really interesting group. Simon Trummer and Pierre Kaffer, of course, I think, raced together. Did they race together with Bike Hollers a few years ago? Or am I just making that up?
I mean, it sounds familiar.
I know both of them have raced recently in the WEC, so that's definitely quality that they've got in that team.
Looking through a diamond, a little diamond in the haystack here.
Hmm.
Number two, Gigaspeed, Team Gigaspeed Performance. It's a new team, but it's a Porsche GT3 with basically Gigaspeed, the Vodafone sponsorships. I'm sure the Deutschland stream is going to focus on these guys heavily. Lucas Lehr is in this car, and if you don't recognize that name, he is an American Le Mans Series driver that raced with Muscle Milk, Pickett Racing, and won everything.
See, I recognize that name, but I wasn't watching ALMS back then, so I didn't actually really know how significant that was. That's really cool. But I feel like if we're going to talk about Porsches the entire thing, everyone's going to call favoritism. So talk about something else. Talk about one of the other brands. Let's go with Audi. And Audi have brought a crazy amount of quality, but a few less cars this year than I think they had last year. So they've got the reigning champions, the number one car, the Motorsport Team Land, with Mies, the Vanderlyn brothers, and René Rast in that car. It's just...
René Rast is in a very interesting situation this weekend because he is an Audi wildcard driver for the World Touring Car Cup races that's going on at the Nordschleife for this weekend. He'll be there's three races, basically. So he'll be racing like three lap races in the Audi TCR car. Then he has to get up, get to an Audi GT3 car, and try to balance that between his schedule.
And he's listed in two cars as well. I was going to bring this up actually. The number 8 WRT Audi actually has Kelvin van der Linde and René Rast listed again. Now this is a really interesting situation. You are allowed to do this, aren't you?
Yeah. Some teams do that, or some drivers do that, because just in case if their car hits the bed early, I mean, they have a second car to go to, you know, another chance to kind of win. I believe you can only do two cars, I believe, which is understandable. Not many people do three cars anyway. I mean, IMSA, you're allowed to switch between classes in the race, so switching between cars offers them kind of like a security in the fact that if something goes wrong with a car, they have another car to go to.
And I think we saw, was it Aka ASP do this in 2016, where they had the same four drivers listed in both cars. And so, like, one of them had a minor incident that sent them into the pits for 10 minutes to do some repairs and then was slow after that. And so they all jumped ship onto the other car, which ended up finishing second, I think. Second or third. But that's not all that Audi are bringing. They're also bringing their team. Just to wrap back around, the other two drivers in that WRT car, just by the way, you know, just a guy called Robin Freins and Dries Vantor. So, like,
and
I can't handle how crazy these teams are.
And those two drivers who just listed, I believe, won the Bathurst 12 hour this year.
Yes, that's right. And they won the, I think they might have won or they might have not won. I'm struggling to remember last year's Blank Pan Sprint Series. Was it Stuart Leonard and Robin Freins that won, or they got lost because they got a penalty on the last lap or something ridiculous? Because I know I think Stuart Leonard won, but I'm trying to remember whether or not Robin Freins and Vantor were his teammates. Nah, regardless, they're very experienced, very, very quick. Audi Sport Team Phoenix are here. They're bringing along Christopher Haase, Frank Stippler, Frederik Vervish, and Nico Müller. Another crazy good team. It's just quality up and down the field. I feel like that's as much. Oh, no. WRT have a sister car as well, which, again, has Marcus Winkelhock, Mike Rockenfeller, Christopher Haase, and Nico Müller. So Winkelhock, who basically drove the team to victory in the Spa 24 last year, along with Chris and Chris, and former Audi LMP1 driver Mike Rockenfeller. So, hell yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, these two cars in between them, one of them is going to be the orange car, which will be Mucha Motorsport, like you see in the ADAC GT Masters Championship and the 24 Hours of Dubai, if you've seen that race, that car. Then you have Audi Sport Team BWT, which is going to be, yes, that pink livery.
Oh, nice. Love me some pink racing cars.
I want to point out something that I saw.
Yeah?
Conrad Motorsport coming in with what seems to be the only Lamborghini GT3 in the race.
Yeah,
they haven't been that much good luck recently, as they had a bunch of problems in the first two VLN races in the qualifying race.
Oh no, there is another. Oh, I know there's a Super Trofeo cars. I was going to say there are other Lamborghinis, but they are Super Trofeo cars. So is there no Grasser at the Nürburgring this year?
Nope.
That is supremely disappointing given their recent run of form.
I mean, you have the full Blank Pan schedule. You have Kreventic that they seem to be focusing on a lot in ADAC GT Masters, so it might be spreading it too thin.
Yeah, I guess, but I think for a landmark event such as this, you know, wouldn't you go all out? I don't know. That's just me.
I'm noticing on the entry list there's a few, lots of amateur Mercedes GT3 teams. I mean, Auto Arena Motorsports. I've never heard that team name before, but you have Clemens Schmidt, which has been kind of a rising star. Jerome Bleekemolen and Rafael Marcello, Blankpin, of course, Rafael Blankpin, GT Asia driver. Then you have, let's see here, Landgraf Motorsport, a VLN regular. And, I mean, they have Edward Sandstrom, Tristan Vautier, Sebastian Osch, and Kenneth Heyer. I mean, both, all four names, people do recognize them in their niche form of motorsports.
Yeah, it's definitely names I remember. I'm just trying to find where they are on the entry list because, the entry list
Landgraf is,
just...
is number 16, yep. And Auto Arena's between 16 and 1.
That's super helpful. There it is. Yeah, I was going to mention those cars because they seem... I think those type of cars, those cars which are like sort of VLN sort of specialists, might actually fly under the radar when you have such like star power that we have here. Because if you look at the other Mercedes teams, they're full of just drivers that you would expect to win everything that they touch. I mean, the Black Falcon teams have the likes of Engel, Christodoulou, Metzger, Mueller, Thomas Jaeger, Yelmer Berman, Lucas Stoltz, Jan Seyfarth as well. And then that's not even, we haven't even got anywhere close to HTP yet, which, like, we were talking about Audi and Porsche bringing ridiculously crazy lineups. Try this one on for size. Let's see if I can find it again. Here we go. In one car, they got two cars. In one car, you have Dominic Bauman, Eduardo Morata, Mr. Macau, basically, Renger van der Zande, and Daniel Junkadella. In the other car, they have Christian Hohenadel, Indy Jonche, Maximilian Gertz, and Renger van der Zande again. Like, crazy lineups.
Yeah.
It is like every German team at the moment has brought the absolute top caliber of their drivers, which just goes to show, I think, how much of a respected and prestigious event this has become. It's no longer just a club day with a few GT3 cars hammering around. It is really a club day with an entire field of 35 GT3 cars hammering around.
Yeah, it's more professional than that, isn't it? I mean, many these German manufacturers treat it as their Le Mans. They get all the factory drivers out and everything, and I mean, it's just a spectacle. I mean, you get the support, the wonderful support events, you get the atmosphere from the crowd, the camping area, I mean, the passionate fans, and in the grandstands and camping sites alike. It's just a wonderful sight in the world of motorsports.
Mm. What other teams do you reckon have a chance in the SP9 class? I mean, we haven't even talked about Rover Racing yet. BMW's top team, they took second place last year, took the win last round in VLN. So they are definitely a team to be watching. And considering that they've got the BMW M6 has got a weight break as well, that's only going to play further into their hands for the guys like Nicky Katzberg, Richard Westbrook, Jesse Krohn, Alex Sims, Connor DiFilippi, Martin Tomczyk, and even further afield in the Shell Helix car, which it seems to be... I don't know. I don't really get the... It's like a satellite BMW operation, but it's filled with drivers almost good as the main one. Augusto Farfus, Marcus Paltela, Christian Cronjes, and Fabian Schiller. Like, that car last year was well in the hunt until a late accident with... I think it was a... Cup 5 BMW took it out, so...
Yeah, so speaking from past knowledge, Falkenhorst also attains this car as well. So that explains the star lineup they have.
Yeah, I guess. And, I mean, Falkenhorst himself are bringing two cars, neither of which necessarily, like, race-winning lineups, I don't think, but still respectable, a very respectable team with a very respectable operation and lineup.
That kind of it for SP9. There's a Ferrari, we touched on the Falcon Tire guys.
We touched on Fricadelli, touched on a lot of the Audi guys. Yeah, and that's the thing with the SP9 class at this event. It does turn into a little bit of a German free-for-all sometimes. I think I've just got this up next to me now. The last time a German car was not the winner of the 24 Hours of Nürburgring was in 2002, where it was a Chrysler Viper GTSR, and that car was run by Zach Speed, an entirely German team. So, yep. So
I believe Boris said, American NASCAR driver, made it over his like Grand Am road racing and just road racing in general. And I'd say it's ran that team and won the race overall as well.
Yeah. So yeah, that's 2005, and that was the last time that a car won that did not feature a German driver. If you want to go even further, but that was also at the wheel of a BMW M3. If you want to go even further back than that, the last time before that a car didn't feature a German driver was in 1989, when Emanuele Pirro, Roberto Ravaglia and Fabien Giraud, I think that's how you say that name, won for an Italian team, Team Bigazzi, but they were at the wheel of a BMW. Like, seriously, if you look at the Wikipedia page for a list of winners, it's just a string of German national flags. It's crazy.
And, of course, the attention the media is going to be focused on is, of course, the higher classes, your GT3, your GT4s, but the lower classes, it would be remiss if we didn't touch on that. Of course, not in depth, but just a little bit of discussion. I mean, you have like Toyota GT86s. You had the Corolla Altuses from Thailand that Flood mentioned before. Of course, Toyota Gazoo Racing, a full factory effort with, I believe, a Lexus. I don't know what exact Lexus it is, but it's a Lexus closer to the GT3 spec. And much, much more. I mean, Renault Clio's run this race.
I love the Clio.
God's sake.
And the interesting thing is, if you look further afield outside of the SP9 class, you can still see crazy level drivers in GT4 or even lower machinery. Yeah. I mean,
Alexander Lind is racing in the Vantage.
The SP8, he's in that car with Jonathan Adams as well. So that's a factory supported driving team, you know, Aston Martin V8 Vantage. Further afield, there's Dominic Feinbacher and Mario Feinbacher racing in that Lexus RCF that you may have mentioned, which is, I think. No, sorry, it's not the factory one. It's a different one. That
Farnbacher brothers, yep. Well, the Farnbacher brothers have lots of experience in the Lexus GT3 because they won it in the International GT Open in 2017 at Estoril.
Nice. One for the Americans in the audience. Pro Sport Performance are actually racing in SP7, the seat of their 911 GT3 Cup car.
Coming off their heel of an A6 AM win at the 12 Hours of Navarra, they'll have lots of motivation coming into this race.
Yeah, so that's Charles Putman, Charles Espenalb, and Joe Foster, and teaming up with Xavier Marcin from Belgium for that car, which I think is cool. That's a team that's also come out to Bathurst and done really well in Australia at the 12-hour. So it's always cool to see that name pop up.
There's also, I'm not sure if it's totally factory, but the Subaru WRX STI that caught on flames last year.
They're back! I
mean, Carlo Van Damme is the notable driver in that one. He's
what
like
a name.
Black Pan GT Asia guy. He also races the Thailand Super Series, if I recall correctly.
That is a cool car. I love watching that car like smash its way around the Nürburgring. They were on for a class win last year as well, until the aforementioned catching fire incident.
Yep. An SP3T.
Nice. Are there any other names or cars that you want to talk about? We've already talked about the Foxtel. We've talked about some of the AT cars that are really interesting. We've talked about the Corollas and the Calibras and the Clios.
Wow, that alliteration actually worked a lot better than I was expecting.
I do know because I scanned the entry list a few times before throughout the weekend before we did the podcast that Bernd Schneider is in a GT4 this year. So he's kind of stepping back from main GT3 duties, but still catching a bit of a racing bug, but doing it in a less media attention kind of way. GT4 for Bernd Schneider this year. Of course, TCRs is an Opel Astra, Audi, you know, all that.
I'm interested that I just found the...
Oh, found it.
Yeah, the Mercedes Driving Academy
Oh! It's an SP8T.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. So it's listed as the makers of Mercedes-AMG GT4, but it's in SP8T, so it's not actually quite in GT4. Why... Do you have any idea why that might be?
Probably not going to be a lot of cars in SP8T, so basically easy class one.
I mean, I guess. Yeah, that's one reason. It might not be homologated yet. I remember, I think it was last year when Phoenix were prototyping the Audi R8 or something. There was something to an effect that they were introducing a GT4 car that wasn't quite homologated yet, so they ran it as an SP8 class car. So it could be a similar situation again. It could be like a prototype GT4, so something that they're looking to test in race conditions.
That could be it. Okay, so I found number 241, Pixum Team at Jilin Motorsport. One of their drivers is named Rink Ralph Peter.
Why?
There's a completely USA driver lineup in number 253. Sakurto Sorg Ryan Sport, this is also in Cup 5. James Clegg, Cameron Evans, Charlie Postens, and Tyler Cook. For American fans, that's a card to choose from. There's also, what's this? There's a dude named Montana Montana.
What? See, this is the thing. You can't just get lost in the entry list looking for dumb stuff for the entire day if you wanted to.
And there's no quotes around it.
Yeah, so if you have looked at the entry list, you will notice that some drivers have quotes around them, and what that means is that they're actually driving under an alias, whether that be because they're an experienced driver who doesn't want any media attention, or they're someone who doesn't want their racing to be well-known, like a business owner or something like that.
Darren Turner did that one year, I believe, or I can't remember if it was Darren Turner, but it was some pretty big guy racing the 24 Hours of Silverstone. He actually went on and won the thing, and that kind of backfired.
It kind of just sort of adds to the sort of spectacle of it. So we've got a little bit of time now. We've got about 10 minutes before we want to be wrapping up. Do we want to talk about some of the specific rules and regulations?
We did miss one thing.
Ooh, what did we miss?
Okay, we gotta tip off to Alex and Claire. We gotta give one to him. Charlie Eastwood.
Oh, is he racing? That's in the
420 Care for Climate. Yes, he is.
Which car did you say he was?
Number 420 Care for Climate Club Sport car.
Yeah, that AT car that we were really interested in. Oh, that's really cool. Charlie Eastwood has recently come off a second place in class at the WEC, I believe, with TF Sport. As a class win or a second place in class in Pro-Am or in Am at Blancpain with the Aston Martin at the Monza race, I believe. Definitely remember Charlie...
Something around that.
Yeah, I definitely remember Charlie Eastwood doing very well at Monza. So, yeah, it's cool to see that name pop up again. And, hey, if we keep recognizing the same sort of names, it means that they're obviously onto something. Cool.
And that basically kind of wraps it up. If you want a more detailed look, I mean, the entry list is available on Daily Sports Car now, and also the Nürburgring. You go to the Nürburgring website, click on, there should be like a link in the sidebar called ATSC Zurich 24 Hours. Click on that, and there should be an entry list available. And also with a detailed list of scheduled events.
Yeah. So, just because we've got a little bit of time, do we want to talk about some of the specific regulations regarding pit stops and the race start and the race finish?
Yeah, we can go ahead. As far if I remember correctly, there's no minimum pit stop time until the last hour and a half of the race.
It's the other way around. So there's a minimum pit stop time that's enforced simply due to the size of the track. So the difference between being able to run eight lap stints and seven lap stints is so great.
Oh, yes, because the longer you go, the longer your pit stop time is.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's I think it's a 30-second longer stop for every lap that you do. Don't quote me on that. I probably need to have studied the supplementary regulations before I started this. But basically, the deal is the longer your stints are, the longer your stops have to be in order to make up for that. Now, this all gets thrown out the window in the last hour of the race.
If I remember correctly, when it comes to the last hour, the quicker you come into the pits, is it still the same, like the longer it is?
It's on a sliding scale. So further out from the finish you are, the longer your stop is. So
if you hit 10 minutes to go, the shorter, you get a shorter pit stop time.
I think once you get to half an hour to go, there's no minimum pit stop time. But in the last hour of the race, you actually have to worry about how many laps you can go in order to get to a position where your last pit stop is going to be as short as possible. So this is the situation we ran into 2 years ago, where we were wondering about minimum pit stop times and how that would play into the end of the race. So you will hear the commentators talk about this, and it will become a factor towards the end of the race. It is just something to keep track of, but it shouldn't, affect things too much. Hopefully, maybe. It could become... It does add an extra element to strategy, though, and that's, I think, something that's really, really interesting. And something you don't really see, you know, for good reason outside of this sort of event. And I say for good reason because Blank Pain also has minimum pit stop times in endurance events, and they are the worst thing in the entire universe.
But Spot 24, it's weird because I get excited because, hey, it's another huge 24-hour race, but then I remember the pit stop times when... You know, when they go in the pits, it's like, yeah, that kind of ruins it for me.
It's the worst. Anyway, let's not get angry about that yet. Let's leave the Spa.
let's leave that for middle of July.
Exactly. Another thing that is unique to this race, well, unique to VLN and race at the Nordschleife, is that when the time is up, it doesn't matter where the overall leader is. As soon as you cross the finish line, that's your race done. So
that's only for the actual 24-hour race. Even in the 24-hour qualifying race, they go by when the leader goes with the leader.
Oh, only in 24-hour race. VLN races as well. I thought it was standard for all the VLN races.
No, in the VLN races and the 24-hour qualifying race, it goes where the leader is on the track in relation to the time. And of course, in the 24-hour race, once the clock hits those zeros, chicken flag gets handed out no matter what.
Yeah, and that kind of does lead to a little bit of falsification of the results, falsification of how close the results are, because in 2016, for example, that race I keep harping on about, there were another group of cars about a quarter of a lap behind the leading duo that were still very close to being on the lead lap, but of course, because the time limit came between the battle for the lead and the battle for third place, it looked like there was only two cars on the lead lap when in actuality there was a string of cars that were on the lead lap. So another thing to keep in mind. And then finally, the start. We'll go in the opposite direction. The start of the race is actually done pretty uniquely, I think. It actually comes on in... Is it still three waves?
Yep, three waves.
Okay.
The first wave is your GT3 cars, and I believe... Okay. I'm not sure if their GT4 is included in that.
And then the next group is sort of your cup class cars, is it? Or is that more the last group?
No, it's your cup class cars, and that's where your TCR cars go along with it as well. Then group 3 is your cup 5 guys that lead the charge and everything else that doesn't follow through the other two waves.
Cool. And it is just a really, really cool way of starting the race, I think. The fact that you get, like, 140 cars that set off in such a staggered fashion, it does give the lower class cars a little bit of their moment in the sunshine as well, to have that start separate from everything else. And finally, slow zones are heavily... were first implemented at the Nürburgring and are heavily used throughout the race. So you actually won't see a safety car unless something catastrophic happens.
Like the hail.
Like the hail. But even then, they red flagged it. They didn't put a safety car out. They just red flagged it.
Well, they had a safety car. If you like a technical, it was a safety car when they lifted the red flag.
Oh, yeah, that was right. But yeah, so you will see, like, recovery vehicles, like, just kind of trucking their way along the track. Because, of course, because it's in the middle of a freaking forest on a mountain, there's no access roads. So the only way to get to and from a bunch of the incidents are on the track. So you'll just see, like, slow zones or reduced speed zones for passing recovery vehicles. And that's just normal.
I'm sure by the time dusk falls on the circuit, when the helicopters have to leave Dodge, you'll see graveyards on the circuit, I'm sure.
Yep. There's always a hard luck story at this event. Always. So, how do we watch this event, Chris?
Well, I mean, it's getting easier and easier every year, which is definitely a step in the right direction. Live timing, I'm kind of worried about, because it might not be your usual Creventic timing that we all know and love. I think it's one of the ones that VLN has, which I'm not... I mean, it's different, and it's not quite as much of an eye candy as the Creventic ones was, but we'll see come Thursday when the qualifying session happens.
Is it still the Alcamel systems timing, though? I feel like as
it
long
was
as
never
it's...
ran by Alcamel.
Oh, really?
It was always the Creventic race results .nu guys.
Huh.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then, so the race is streamed live on YouTube for free, which is awesome.
Exactly. I'm not sure. ADAC, the official ADAC Zurich 24-hour race will be on that channel. Vodafone Deutschland did stream it last year as well,
with
English and German commentary.
They use this as a pretty big advertising thing, because the whole reason that Vodafone go about streaming this is that they can boast about being able to cover the entire area in like 3G or 4G or whatever. And yeah, so hey, good on them. And they like have cameras set up and do all the... I think they got drones now as well or something. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, they have drones. They had a... drone a couple of years ago, I believe, in Foxhole and the carousel. That's usually mainly for like early morning shots when the helicopter isn't quite out there yet. But yeah, and they also have a... If that's Adelaide 500, I'm going to use that reference. There's a little drone that crosses the entire front stretch.
Yep,
that's what they have for the 24.
Yep, the zipline camera. That's real cool.
They have a DJI drones that do all the work for them.
Cool. Nice. And then English commentary is supplied by Radio Le Mans and associated vendors, I believe.
Yep, Radio Le Mans. I'm sorry, Radio Show Limited.
Yep.
Johnny, of course, Johnny Palmer. The whole crew is probably going to be there. Johnny Palmer won't be there.
What?
He has European Le Mans Series duties.
Oh, that's
so
the worst.
No Palmer.
But at least
and no
be Paul,
Graham Goodwin.
But there'll definitely be Paul Trustwell, though, right?
Yep.
Finally, race threads for those watching on subreddit will be up on r/WEC. Yes? No? Where are you? You're the GT3 guy. Where do you want them to be?
Yeah, it'll be on r/WEC. Even though we do have the clash with the European Le Mans Series, but it's very minimal.
Yeah,
the Michelin Le Mans Cup it's not too big right now, and the European Le Mans Series probably only clashes with the last couple of hours. So it'll be on r/WEC, pinned to the top.
Nice.
Of course, of other stuff smaller stuff will be on our blind panel.
Nice. Anything else you want to add before we wrap all of this up?
I think we'd be remiss to not talk about the support events.
Okay. What action is supporting? We've already mentioned World Touring Car Racing or World Touring Car Cup, right? One of the two.
Yep, and that's basically just a bunch of TCR cars. It's about higher 20s, lower 30. So about 30 cars in that, and their first race is actually on Thursday. So starting immediately on the get-go of Thursday, you got racing action for the Nordschleife, along with, of course, the practice and qualifying, which is all streamed live. And this is it's a third party guy, but Motorsport 2017. That's the YouTube channel. He has all the stuff scheduled to be streamed, and there'll be replays. So if the official stuff doesn't have any replays, that'll be the guy to go if you missed because of work or school or anything.
Work,
so that's nice though. Yeah, and so then you get to the Friday. That's the big day. That's where you have your top 30 qualifying. That's the main event of the day. But of course, before that, we have, I believe, the first race of the Audi R8 LMS Cup, which will be the second round for them. And this,
forgot about that. Yeah, that's crazy.
This is the same series that ran at Adelaide, basically, and the same series for the past few years that's been an Asian exclusive series. This will be the first time I've ever transversed across the into the European continent. But the only I think they have a small amount of cars, so they're using the Grand Prix circuit like they did for the Audi TT Cup for the past few years.
I mean, I'd love them to be on the Nordschleife, but I'm okay with that because touring contingent of that series was significant, but it made up just over half of the field in Adelaide, I think. The rest of it were wildcard local entries running Audi R8 LMS cars. So, yeah, that's real cool. I completely forgot about that. And, yeah, damn, that's awesome.
I can't remember which race it was.
Do they have an entry?
Champions. I actually, they're really hard to find.
Okay. I was going to see if any of the Australians had made the trip.
Their website can be tricky to navigate to, but I can't remember what the stipulation was. But whoever won the championship or whoever won like a certain amount of rounds, they get put into an entry for a 24 race. I can't remember which one. It was either Spa or Nürburgring.
I feel like it's Spa because there was talk of one of the Australian guys, Tony Bates, really pushing to be in the contention for that championship come the Asian rounds, so that way he can get that run at Spa. So
yeah, I think it's Spa because I believe it's been that for the past few years for that.
Yeah,
for that championship. Also, of course, we mentioned the World Touring Car Cup. Race one will be live streamed on their Facebook page. So there'll be some official way to watch them. The races two and three on the Saturday might be used through illegal methods, but she didn't hear that from me. but I think one of the best parts of the weekend is the Friday ADAC 24-hour classic race, which is basically just 3 hours of a bunch of classic motorsport enthusiasts and classic cars go around the circuit for 3 hours. And there's 160 cars already entered. I pulled up the entry list. Let's see some notables that are in this.
Can you send this to me quickly? Where is it?
Oh, I can link it to you, bud.
Yes. So what do we got?
I mean, you got Ford Escorts. You got BMW from 2002 on here. Porsche 912, Porsche 924, Porsche 911 RSR.
Oh, that's awesome. A few more Mantas. Nice.
There's a few more Oakville Mantas.
There's now, a string of VW Polos on here. What?
Yeah, last year, there's actually a BMW M1 Pro car.
Oh, no way. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Then there's, of course, the bunch of old classic Porsche 911 Carreras.
There's a 935K on here as well. Oh, that's awesome. There's a Morgan on here? What?
Yeah. There's also, like, a Mercedes from, like, in the 1930s one year.
Oh, that's awesome. Is this? Please tell me this race is streamed.
It is.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to get my classic car on. That's cool. There's some really, really fascinating cars on this list. Like, there's, like, just looking out, there's a few Corolla 86, AE86s. So the old, like, the drift car, basically. There's a bunch of them on the list. A string of old Porsches, 944s, 928s. Yeah.
Only problem is that there's, the only catch is that there's no English commentary.
That's a shame. That's all right. I'm just going to be happy looking at the pretty cars. Yeah.
And this, and of course,
Oh, there's a Volvo 240.
So put into a linear situation. Thursday, practice and night qualifying for the 24 hours of Nürburgring. You have WTCR also racing that day. Friday, you have Audi Sport R8 LMS Cup, the classic car 3-hour race, and of course top 30 qualifying. And then the Saturday, wake up nice and early, get your cup of coffee, watch some Audi Sport R8 LMSs for the race 2. Warm up for the 24-hour race, and of course, the two WTCR races that go back-to-back, have a nice, maybe half-hour nap, and wake up with 24 hours of Nürburgring.
Nice. That was real good. And you know how you said that wake up real nice and early? Yeah, for me, the race starts at 11 p.m., so I'll make sure I'm up real early for that. Cool. I think that wraps everything up for this, the 24 hours of Nürburgring podcast. Thank you again for your wondrous insight into the most obscure corner of motorsport, Chris Washington.
Oh, no problem at all. It's been a joy previewing this race the past 2 or 3 years. And I just, you can't shake off that Nürburgring vibe, baby.
It is just something else. I'm really excited for it. The only problem is I will be working throughout most of the event, which is a pain in the butt.
One little tangent before I go off here.
Okay, yep.
I had to do like a project. This was 8th grade about Germany. And it was the Friday before the race. And it was all last minute. Like I drew the picture of Germany in like 10 minutes. And yep. I was like, hey, look at this. It's a 24-hour race. There's like 160 cars. People like to eat bratwurst. They drink beer. And guess what? I got an A in the assignment. So it was well, yeah.
That was where your dream of motorsport started, right? That was the moment.
Oh, it started well before that.
Good call. Okay, and on that note, I think that brings us to the end. Again, thank you very much, and thank you everyone for listening. Hopefully you enjoy the weekend, and to the bunch of new people that probably might be listening or might be enjoying the race this weekend, ask us questions, and if we don't know the answers, tweet the commentators the questions, because if we don't know the answers, they definitely will, and yeah, they're super happy to interact with us. Us being
and yes,
the greater thing.
Alonso is in this race. Wink, wink.
Okay. Thank you very much. See you next time. Bye.